We're here to talk about conscious living and conscious working. Is everybody in the right room? The way we'll start is I'll give a little introduction and deal with the goals of the class and the basic principles that we're going to be following. And then we'll have an opportunity for you to address your reasons for being here. The way we like to run the class is that we will bring forth a set of principles and within a structure that we'll be explaining, and then create a dialogue, more so than a lecture for the entire day, which would tire us out and tire you out, probably. More of a dialogue about how is it that we can bring this process of meditation and the basic principles that underlie Buddhist thinking, but not in a sectarian kind of way, but in a more broadly based way that allows you to take these principles and guidelines and so forth and bring them into your daily life, no matter what your ism is. If you have no ism, or atheism, or Catholicism, or what have you, doesn't matter from the point of view of being able to integrate these principles and the techniques that we'll be giving into your life, so that your life can become more full and more complete and perhaps have less unnecessary suffering associated with it. So that's kind of the frame of reference for our work together. Now, when I say these principles, we're about establishing a framework that's based on integrating three major components. One component is effective behavior or skillful behavior, sometimes called ethical behavior. And that's an important frame because basically it's how we express our level of wisdom, our level of accomplishment in the integration of the other two parts, which are wisdom and meditation. So we've got these three components, ethical behavior, wisdom, and meditation, and they kind of intertwine with one another. The ethical behavior is an expression of our level of wisdom. The wisdom is a base from which ethical behavior springs, and the meditation allows us to be much more effective in our behavior and cultivates wisdom. So you can see that these all kind of flow together in a very nice, clear way. So we bring these three elements together so that we can, in effect, be more loving, more kind, more effective in our relationships, more effective in our work, whatever that work might be, whether it's art or business or what have you, and more effective just in the process of living. One of the elements of this day is it's a great opportunity. I don't know how many of you spend a day, a week, or a day, a month even, just dealing with nothing other than being present, being some kind of a Sabbath quality to it. Yeah? How many of you spend some period of time, it doesn't even have to be a whole day, 20 minutes maybe, just focusing on nothing other than the present moment, on spirit if that's your game, or presence, or whatever it is that you want to call it. That's what we have an opportunity to do today. So we put on a cloak of, or an aura of presence, an aura of protection from the day-to-day, moment-to-moment craziness that goes on outside of that aura, and we rest, we relax. One of the things that will come up over and over again, Michael will mention it, I'll mention it, just relax is the basic principle that underlies this whole course. Yeah? Just relax. Everything else is there to help you just relax. So we're not here to learn something in a didactic way. We're not here to do anything but to relax in the moment and allow our intrinsic wisdom to arise and be present. And that will help us relax even more. So that's kind of the underlying process that we have. just a little poll. How many of you have meditated before? And just to get a sense of many, if not all, but anybody new to meditation? Okay. So we'll give instruction, you know, and you'll see it's relatively simple. Not necessarily the easiest thing in the world, but relatively simple. and how many of you are kind of new to Buddhism, new to the to the principles and practices of Buddhism? All right, so that gives us a sense of, you know, the kind of the levels that we have to hit. But the important thing is that if we use any terminology or any concepts that come up that you don't understand, or you maybe understand but are not sure that you understand it fully or in the way that we're using it, raise your hand and ask a question. This is very important. Ah, good question. Good question. Yeah, exactly. So, they're not actually considered to be idols. In fact, there's quite a number of kind of dyed-in-the-wool fundamentalist Buddhists who say that any image is just a like an expression of idol worship in some form, an expression of ignorance. So why the statue is there is just as a reminder. It's sometimes we forget that that we have this intrinsic quality. So we look at an image and we say, by the way, that's me in that image. That's, if you want to call it God in that image, it's God, but it's not, the image doesn't mean anything. In fact, I was reading someplace where a Zen monk was confronted with the same question, and he took this image that he had, which was made out of clay, and threw it against the wall and smattered it into a billion pieces, and he said, that's what we think of images. So, it's also, while we're talking about these particular images, this is, of course, the Buddha, the Shakyamuni Buddha, in a one of his many poses, and in this pose he's not wearing any, there's no adornment. There's no, sometimes you see the Buddha with robes and crowns and things like that. Unadorned, because that's the basic presence, and we'll talk more about that. The other one, the female, is called Prajnaparamita, the epitome or the perfection of wisdom. And she's known as the mother of the Buddhas. But she's not a person. She represents this underlying wisdom that allows us to just dissolve all of these images and everything else into the oneness. So. So now, let's set another tone for the day. We're going to practice something that's a form of meditation. It's a purification. It uses a very simple sound or a mantra. It's a seed syllable. It's ah. Can everybody remember that? Ah. Yeah, easy. So what is ah? Ah is a sound that in some circles is viewed as kind of the basic underlying presence of deep, deep relaxation, deep expression of emptiness and at the same time, a clarity. It's this, think about what happens when you're unconsciously presented with something that's just so nice and relaxing, and you say, ah, yeah? So it's, we'll chant that for, you know, several minutes, and we'll do it together. And, you know, you voice it if you, you know, feel reasonably comfortable doing that. If you want to do it silently, you can do it silently. But it's better to voice it. It's better to use the sound as a way of tuning your body and your mind so that we're more receptive to what's happening today, more getting us into that space, into that aura that we spoke about before. As we're chanting, don't necessarily follow me in my breath length or anything like that. It's just create a harmony that's comfortable for you and your ability to breathe and to chant in this way. So find a comfortable posture. Generally, we recommend that posture have head, neck, back in a line so that there's a free and easy movement of the breath. Gently close the eyes, or as Michael suggests, partially close them if that is more comfortable for you. And just feel your body. Just feel the sensations of your body, the weight against your chair or your cushion, the air against your skin. Feel your breath as it enters and leaves the body. And just feeling in this way, come to the present moment. Let any thoughts that might arise simply come up and disappear. And then we begin. Ah. So we can see that we can use sound as a way of tuning ourselves, and whether that sound is as simple as the ah, which you can find in just about every basic sound, you know, even standing on a corner and listening to the flow of traffic, or in the subway, listening to all of the underlying sounds there. What's underneath it all is this ah. So you, instead of being annoyed by the clattering of the noise around us, just find the ah, you know, and let that tune your body and your mind. And then, of course, we use many different sounds as a means of doing it. The bell is a good example. We use it as a kind of a punctuating sound. There's nothing particularly holy about bells except that they ring. And the ringing gives us an opportunity to just see where we are with respect to the reverberations that are taking place and so forth. So sound is a way of tuning, and I can already feel that aura is forming. Yeah, how many of you can feel a palpable difference between how you felt when you came in, where your mind was and where your body was, and how you feel now? Is there a difference? So, it's that difference that we're looking to pay attention to. Not even saying that one is better than the other, but paying attention. So, the next step is to explore your reasons for being here. And rather than exploring that in this whole big group, we recommend that you break up into groups of three. If they're an uneven group, a group of two or a group of four is okay. But don't go any bigger than that, because we want to give an opportunity for each person to express their reason for being here. What's your intention for spending this day? Or if you've signed up for the wider course that this day might be the beginning of, what's your intention over that period of time? And so why are you here? What is it that you expect to achieve out of being here? And the more you can express that overtly, the more likely it is that you'll actually understand why you're here, and then from that be able to actually achieve what part of your desires and goals are achievable. So we haven't fully introduced ourselves. Dalila introduced us, but I'm George, and my day job is as a management consultant, and I work in the area of improving organizational effectiveness and promoting optimal performance. And I've been studying and practicing yoga and Buddhism since the early 1970s. It has kind of informed my life, and I can't even imagine how anybody can make it through without having some kind of a base like that. So I've written a couple of books on how to integrate the practices of meditation, particularly mindfulness meditation, into things like project management and conflict management, and continue to teach in this form and in other forms. Okay, I should also say that both Michael and I bring a certain eclectic quality. Right? As Michael mentioned, we've been with a number of teachers from different traditions, and those traditions span from the Theravadin, which is a tradition that's kind of the foundation for New York Insight and associated with a lot of our mindfulness meditation. But we've also studied in what's called the Bhakti world, the world of devotional. And that is on one extreme, so to speak, and the other extreme being the bare awareness, bare attention associated with the Theravadin approach to Buddhism, and then kind of in between the Tibetan Vajrayana Mahayana world of how to express the Buddhist teachings in a different form, bringing more of the sense of emptiness and the quality of how we work with that Prajnaparamita, that perfection of wisdom as the base. So we bring together a lot of different traditions into the way that we express the basic tenets of Buddhism. So if anybody is a purist, we try as much as possible to say when we're coming from this place or that place, but this is not so much a course in the in the sutras or in the academic aspect of Buddhism, but more a course in how do we take these principles and apply them. Okay, so I don't know, I'll repeat that because I don't know if anybody heard. The statement was basically that we come because we might do meditation as a way of finding comfort, but then life gets in the way. And because we're so busy that sometimes we forget. Yes? So as a result, we want some way of incorporating these practices into our day-to-day life so that it becomes more integrated. How many of you have that as kind of your reason for being here? Yeah. Yeah, so it's very interesting. You know, we live in a time when virtual relationships are just normal. And the physical connection is very important, but at the same time, we also can honor the virtual because our time is so precious. And it is very difficult to find. You know, it's easy to find people to hang out with. You just go to a bar or something like that. But to find people who are like-minded is difficult. We'll talk a bit about the three jewels, and one of which is Sangha. So the three jewels are basically the recognition of our Buddha nature. So the Buddha is a jewel in that he provides an example. And then the Dharma, which is the teachings themselves. So we might even call that the way or the Torah or, you know, any kind of expression of truth is a jewel. And then the third jewel is the group of people who are like-minded, who are trotting the path, so to speak, that is laid out in the Dharma. So that Sangha is what we look for. And we get it most effectively when we're together in an environment like this. But once we've gotten it, then we can kind of not have to have the physical so much. Yeah? We still want it. We still need to have it as a kind of a reminder. But ultimately, it becomes something that just is there. And we know it's there. And then we bump into somebody on a plane who's not even anybody that we know. And we start up a conversation and we find that they're part of our Sangha. I think, you know, the important thing for us was to see that it doesn't matter whether we use terminology that comes from the Buddhist tradition or not. What matters is how the principles are practiced in everyday life. That's the key.
Most of us
here
have had
So the Four Noble Truths present kind of a foundation, and the rest of our day will be really exploring the interplay between those parts of the path that represent the way out of our so-called suffering. Let me say a word or two about suffering. It's it's such a strong word, and the Pali and the Sanskrit term for it is dukkha. But dukkha, when you look at in translation, doesn't just translate itself as suffering. It translates itself, a lot of people think that unsatisfactoriness is a better term because it's not so strong. You know, when we think of suffering, we think of, you know, like really being in pain in a very intense, acute way. But there's a certain dissatisfaction that perhaps many of you have experienced with even when you get something that you really have wanted, that all of a sudden you get it and you're disappointed. Yeah? Anybody ever experienced that? Anybody ever not experienced that? One person in the back has not experienced that. So, but basically, this first noble truth is really about how we can take a look at our lives and see whether or not, you know, and it goes back to this notion of this being an experiment and a hypothesis and so forth. The Buddha laid this out and said that this is intrinsic to our lives. Well, is that true or not true? We don't have to believe anybody about it. We just say, okay, this is either true or not true based on my own experience, and if it's true, then it's true. And therefore, I want to see if there's a way to eliminate that from my life. And if there's a way of eliminating it, then what is that way? And perhaps there are multiple ways. Perhaps there are a number of different strategies and tactics that are available, but what the Buddha brought was a way that worked for him. And he said that, okay, if this worked for me, try it and see if it works for numbers of people. Maybe not even everybody. So that's the, you know, the culmination of the Four Noble Truths is here's a way. And it's interesting to me exploring multiple, you know, exploring Judaism, for example, exploring Islam and other world religions and wisdom approaches, is that each of them kind of has a different but similar approach that is basically saying, if you do this stuff and don't do that stuff, you're going to ultimately become free of suffering. You're going to become unified with the, you know, with whether you call it God or the universe or whatever. You're going to become able to deal with things without building on yourself unnecessary stress, unnecessary suffering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So one of the things that we'll look at is the interplay between concentration, doing one thing at a time, seeing that and focusing one's attention on that, and mindfulness, which is the awareness of that. So there's an interesting interplay between those. Okay, so the ability to observe all different aspects, the body, the mind, etc. So in general, this, and I think, you know, these definitions have all, you know, really gotten to the heart of it. Mindfulness is the ability to be present and aware, to observe what's happening with objectivity, so that rather than judging everything and evaluating it and so forth, we can just see it for what it is, and not do anything other than observe and observe objectively. Not shutting things out. Yes, very important. It just, again, it comes to that objectivity. It's like, I don't like this, so I'm going to shut it out. It's seeing what it is, seeing things for what they are. Mm-hmm. So we could say that compassion becomes an expression or a display of our wisdom, which is cultivated by our mindfulness. But it is quite possible to be very, very mindful and not compassionate. Cats. Have you ever noticed a cat stalking a bird? It's very mindful. but it's not really thinking about the bird in a compassionate way. So it's, you know, one of the things that, that we try to bring out as we become more mindful and also more aware of how these teachings are structured, that there are different parts of them. And we'll see that, you know, as we said before, there's a breakdown of this path into eight components. So none of those eight components actually say compassion, but the result of trotting that path and bringing together is displayed in loving kindness and compassion and the quality of having sympathetic joy and the quality of equanimity, you know, sort of expressing that to everyone, not just to, you know, the guy sitting next to you or your kids. But that is what we might call a display or an expression of putting all of those things together. And then we see what happens is the natural unfolding of compassion and loving kindness. But keep in mind that, you know, the ninja, the bandit, you know, these people are extremely mindful, but not compassionate. They're not ethical in their behavior. So we're gonna take a break, and then when we come back from the break, we'll actually practice a meditation technique, in particular, mindfulness or insight meditation. Personally, I find it a nice practice to, whenever I hear a bell, to wait for the reverberations to stop. It's not that the reverberations stop, it's basically that you stop hearing them. They go on for a longer time. But it's kind of a nice way of just becoming centered in the moment. So, speaking of the formal practice, now we're going to, you know, for those of you who have not done mindfulness meditation. I think there's one person who's never meditated. How many of you have meditated but not in the mindfulness meditation approach? Okay. So, because we do have a number of different, there's a number of different techniques for meditation, and they fall into two basic categories. One cultivates what we call the calm state or samadhi states, which have to do with concentrating on a single point, and then through that, we see that the mind becomes very, very still, and in its stillness experiences what we might call emptiness. So that's concentration-based meditation. And the other category is insight or mindfulness-based meditation, which is really about, as we said before, observing objectively whatever is occurring in and around oneself. So the two go together. I mean, in the Eightfold Path, the Buddha clearly distinguishes between concentration, right concentration, and right mindfulness. And that distinction is very important because there are two components that work very, very well together. So many of you, I see most of you are Vipassana or insight meditation or mindfulness meditation. These are all more or less synonyms. The Vipassana is the Pali term that refers to insight, the cultivation of insight. And therefore, insight meditation is Vipassana meditation. And the method is about cultivating mindfulness and through mindfulness to achieve insight. One might say insight into what? Well, insight into the nature of mind, the nature of things in general. So we through mindfulness meditation, we get a sense of an experiential knowledge, actually more than a sense, an experiential knowledge but the basic way that things are, that things are impermanent, that there's dissatisfaction as a natural and normal component of everything that we come in contact with, and that there's a non-self, that there's a quality of being able to get so observing and so objective that we can even observe our tendency to try to hold on to a concept of a permanent self. We'll talk a bit more about that, but these are the insights that arise in insight meditation, are the recognition experientially of these basic marks of existence, these basic premises that we have, that are not conceptual, but are founded in some kind of experience that we can have. So we do mindfulness meditation to cultivate that insight. Now, when we start doing mindfulness meditation, we start usually with a concentration process. Most of you have started by breath concentration, that you focus on the breath, you focus on the physical sensations of the body, and as you do that, you're honing the mind a bit, and then you're seeing the arising of thoughts, the arising of all of those things that take you away from just being aware of the breath. So we're kind of starting with a bit of a concentration, and then as we get more stable in our ability to not just get lost. Anybody ever get lost in their mind? You know, kind of just you're out to lunch, you know, my favorite experience of that is driving along and getting someplace and having absolutely no idea how I got there, you know, which is scary and interesting at the same time. You know, it's like, so in effect, we're cultivating an ability to retrain our minds. That's what meditation is really about. It's retraining the minds. And we've seen more and more, you know, meditation's been around for, you know, like many, many, many moons. You know, it's tens of thousands of years people have been meditating. So we're now finding that science is reinforcing this notion that we can change the way we think and the way our minds are even wired, right? So we can do that, and we do it through the process of meditation and the process of learning the new ways of looking at things, new mental models, if you will. So here we're going to do the meditation practice. We call it a meditation practice when we do formal meditation. What is it a practice? You know, practice, we practice something to actually do something else later, right? So the practice here is to cultivate enough quality of mind, quality of mindfulness, quality of concentration, so that when we are in everyday life, we're able to operate in a mindful, concentrated, focused way and have the ability to choose what we do as opposed to be driven to do what we do because of condition. So, let's find a comfortable posture. Head, neck, back in a line. You want to be relaxed and direct. Take note of the body. Take note of the sensations of the body. The feeling of the weight against the chair or cushion. Any sensations in your legs, your back, arms, head, neck. Just feeling. And take note of the breath. Notice the inhalation and the exhalation. Notice it wherever it's most prevalent for you. It might be the rising and falling of your abdomen or chest, the sensation of the air passing through your nostrils or over your lip. wherever it's most prevalent for you, simply noticing the breath. We use the breath as a touchstone. So if you do become distracted, as soon as you realize that you've become distracted, simply bring your attention back to the body, back to the breath, and begin again, just noticing. We're noticing any thoughts that might arise, any physical sensations, sounds, visual images. Smells, anything that might arise in or around the mind, you simply take note of it, allowing it to be as it is, allowing it to go and come as it pleases, simply noticing. And again, if you become distracted, as soon as you realize that you become distracted, bring your attention back to the breath. And we'll sit for 20 minutes.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.